the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. In each episode of the show, we shine a spotlight on the women who are making strides and changing lives. Hello, and welcome to the Truly Amazing Women Show. I am Hope Katz Gibbs, your host. We are here today with Anna Dutra, the former CEO of Korn Ferry Leadership and Talent Consulting, who is going to share her thoughts on what it's like to enter the second act of her life and career. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thank you, Hope.
We're so thrilled to have you here. And you're in Chicago, we're in DC, so thank God for technology. Before we launch into our Q&A, here's a little background on this truly amazing woman. Anna Dutra is the CEO of Mandala Global Advisors, a company she recently founded. She's also a senior global advisor for Human Intelligence, a technology company. She has 28 years of experience as an executive, consultant, and business leader in industries such as technology, manufacturing, and professional services. In the last 6 years as CEO of Korn Ferry Leadership and Talent Consulting, Anna created a $30 million global business through a combination of organic growth, multiple acquisitions, innovative go-to-market approaches, and incorporation of technology and digitalization of products and services. Pretty amazing, right? She is also the director on the boards of International Women Forum, Children's Memorial Hospital of Chicago, Governor State University, Academy for Urban School Leadership, and the Chicago Philharmonic Society. Over the last few years, she has served on many boards, including the Executives Club of Chicago, the Center for Impact Research, Friends of Conservation, among others. This beautiful Brazilian woman holds an MBA from Kellogg, a master in economics from, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but I'm going to try, from Pontifica Universidade de Rio de Janeiro, and a Juris Doctor from the same school. She was all summa cum laude. Fluent in 4 languages, obviously unlike myself, she speaks Portuguese, English, Spanish, and French, and she lives in Northfield, Illinois with her husband and 3 daughters. Just an amazing, amazing life you've had, Anna. We're so excited to have you here and telling us about Act 2.
Hope, I'm so excited to be here with you as well. Let me give you just the highlights. I didn't have a linear career by any means. So as you mentioned, born and raised in Rio de Janeiro, but I was brought up in a very global environment with not only traveled a lot, but spent our summers partially in different countries. I wanted to be a diplomat growing up, and that's why I was drawn to study law and economics. So I got my undergrad in economics, then a law degree. And then I decided to shadow a couple of people who were diplomats in Brazil and decided that actually reality was not as exciting as I thought at that point. At that point, IBM was starting to recruit in Brazil again. So I just decided to go interview with them and got a job in sales at that point. From sales with IBM, I went into running P&Ls, both customer segments as well as lines of business. And then one day I was in my office and a colleague of mine walked in and said, I just came to say goodbye. I'm going to move to the U.S. to get my MBA. And that was 1989. And I asked him, what is that? And he said, well, it's a master's in business administration, and essentially you can do many, many different things with it. And at that point, I was working at IBM in the group that was the genesis of the consulting group, and I had already realized that I loved to advise clients. So I remember I left work that day and went straight to the American consulate, got all those very, very thick books to prepare you to GMATs and TOEFLs and all the other tests, standardized tests, wrote to the schools, applied to 5 schools, got accepted in all of them, and came to Kellogg primarily because I had such a quantitative background in economics and finance, and I knew the school was very collaborative, very team-based work, and very strong in marketing and strategy. So came here, my husband and I, and came with the goal of let's spend 2 years and see what happens. Well, the 2 years turned into 22 years at this point. And three children later, five jobs, and amazing opportunities that this country gives to people who decide to add value here and try life here. I am now rethinking and restarting my second act. I did throughout my career. I drove 12 acquisitions. I worked in more than 25 countries. I led geographic P&Ls, lines of business, customer P&Ls. And then on the personal side, I have three beautiful daughters now, one already in college. I'm an avid yogini and practice meditation. I have two with all those things floating around. And a few years ago, I started to race triathlons, and I just got hooked and love it.
Yes, and you wrote about that in one of our articles on Being Candescent magazine, which was wonderful, how you broke down these barriers of what you thought you couldn't do. And I think that ties into what we're talking about today. You've coined the phrase the second act dilemma. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, that was born from not just my own self-reflection and conversations with the mirror, right, in terms of what is next, combined with the refusal to call it retirement. When you have the energy and the drive to give back and to leverage what you have done, being 50 means nothing. You can say, well, I'm just going to retire, unless that's what you want to, and then that becomes your second act. I started then, hope, to have conversations with a number of other women who were very successful by all social and accepted standards. They have achieved it all, right? And they were now going through the same dilemma. And what I realized is that once we achieve it all and we reach a certain age and level of maturity, we really start to ask the question, what's next? And some of us, but not all of us, and I want to underscore that, because I'm very grateful for being in the group of people who earn the right to do whatever we want to do. That's a very privileged position, right? I talk with people, too, who say, listen, I'd like to think about what's next now, but I can't. I can't yet. So if you can, you're in a privileged position, but there's a challenge here, is that you also need to be ready to part with things that were very important in the past, right? Like the titles and sometimes even the perks or the comfort of having a paycheck coming in every month, because your second act may mean that there will be so much more ambiguity in your life and in the system. The other important question to ask as you think about your second act is, what do you really identify yourself with? What defines you as an individual, as a leader, and what is truly important for you? And not judge that. It is what it is. You're not going to try to convince yourself that something that at the end of the day you really value and is important for you should not be. Don't do that. But the questions you're really asking at this point in life, and knowing that, well, when you hit 50, chances are that at least you have gone through the first half of your life, is who am I really? What do I want in the second half? And what is my purpose in life? What kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? So that's essentially the genesis and the definition of thinking about your second act dilemma.
And I think what you just said was so interesting, why so many successful people are struggling with this phase, because maybe they've never gone that deep down into their own souls as to understand what it is they're here for, why they're here. They're just kind of going through the motions of what they're supposed to do. So do you find that as you look around at the landscape of your friends, that that's the issue?
I find that, Hope, not only with my friends, but also with people who I partner or work with or work for. As you know, I work primarily with boards and with CEOs, helping them to take companies to the next next level of performance or next phase. And what I'm realizing is that most people are actually taught what success should look like for them. They have people who are influential in their in the early stages of their lives, could be family, parents, teachers or mentors, or what they see in business, in society, or bosses sometimes, who actually give them a recipe of what success should look like. And it's usually based on achievements, promotions, money, status, and all that. And I've come across way too many people who, despite all those achievements, are still miserable. They're just not happy, and they start to ask, well, was it worth it, right? What am I doing with my life now? And one question that I usually ask CEOs and chairmen, people who have influence over the lives of many people, whether they are employees or suppliers or customers, I ask them, if you were one day, you're gone, you're dead, and somebody who you care very, very much about or for, could be your child or your spouse or a good friend, bumps into somebody who knows you, who knew you, and that person does not know that the person they're speaking with is one of your loved ones or very close ones, and your name comes up. What would you like your child to hear a stranger saying about you? And say, oh, so-and-so, oh, yeah, I remembered him, I worked with him, or I knew him from here and there. He or she was, and I never heard anybody answer that. First of all, I've heard many people pausing and not knowing how to answer that right away and having to think about it. But when they really picture and visualize the situation that I described to them, I never heard anybody, Hope, saying, oh, I want them to say Anna was the best operator in the business I have seen. Or she was the one who made more money than, oh, man, she made so much money. I always hear people saying, when they reflect on it, saying, I would like my kid or my spouse or my best friend to hear the other person saying how inspiring I was, how caring I was, how driven to excellence in everything I did in my life I was, how devoted I was. Those are always the expressions that come up. And then you ask the person, okay, how do your behaviors on a day-to-day basis, how do the decisions you make and the things you do match that legacy that you want to leave behind? And then you see people really, really getting into deep thought, deep thinking around what am I doing. So that's why I think that so many successful people are struggling with the next phase, because that's their essentially the last chance to be who you want to be, to fulfill your purpose, and to leave the kind of legacy that you want to leave as an individual leader, a parent, a spouse, whatever roles you play in life, right?
Absolutely. And that makes so much sense. And I think that these phases that we go through are fascinating. But even what's more dramatic is how the millennials are upending the economy. So things are changing. People are retiring at this age and stage, and sometimes they aren't. But looking back and reflecting, so what can people do to plan ahead for the future, to kind of get ahead of this curve? Sometimes you can't know what you want until you're feeling it and you're in that phase. But do you think there is some kind of forethought that people can be incorporating into their thinking as they go through their lives?
You know, I don't want to think about the Act 2 as a retirement plan, right? Well, in your 20s, you start to plan for that. I think it's deeper than that. I think it's about continued self-reflection and self-awareness. So the answer to your question, are there things that people should be doing, is not necessarily, but you have to allow the onset of Act 2 to happen when it has to happen, because you start to get the itch. It's if somebody told me that I would make this decision 5 years ago, I would say, no way, it's not happening. I'm going to continue to climb this one ladder I am in, and I'll never stop. But one day you wake up and it hits you. I think that the opportunity for the new generation is to learn earlier in life that they should be pausing and reflecting more often than our generations did, which was, you know what? You get on the bandwagon, you get on the treadmill, and you just go. And just think about what's the next role and the next achievement and the next is. I think that what I teach my children now is, you know, even when you are 100% sure that you know what's next and what's going to make you happy, step back and think, is this really it? Who am I right now? What do I truly, truly want? About 10 years ago, that was probably 10, 12 years ago, I had a colleague who told me he was going to step out of the role he had in the company we were working to take a job in a non-for-profit organization, and he was just 2 years away from getting a full retirement with tremendous benefits. And I remember asking him, why are you doing this now? You just have to wait 2 more years. And his answer blew me away, because he said, I am doing this now because I don't know if the role that's being offered to me in this non-for-profit will be there 2 years from now. And I'm doing this now because I've worked 25 years to be able to build enough to take a role like that. So I'm doing it because that's what I was working for. That's what I really want to do. I was just being practical. So that's the point I want to illustrate here, is that, yes, there is a lot of, you have to be practical along the way. But what he did was, he did something that he liked to be able to earn the right to do something that he loved. And he went and did it. And by the way, he's still in that role and extremely happy and adding a ton of value to the U.S. education system. So I don't think you rigidly plan, but you constantly question and ask yourself, is what I'm doing fulfilling? What do I really want? And that's about it.
That is brilliant. He did what he liked to earn the right to do what he loved. That is just, could we all live by that rule? I think that's fantastic, right?
Actually, I'm writing it down and I will continue to use it now.
I think we're going to make that the headline of your, that's great.
Let's pause here, because it may turn out that even throughout your life, you are doing what you love. I will challenge that belief and say that many people are most likely doing what they like.
Yeah. Right, because we're practical. We're trained to be practical. We're generations of, you know, plan B. Yes, you want to be a rock star, but really take some typing classes. I even did it to my daughter, who is an amazing photographer. You know, I said, but let's have a plan B just in case. You can go do art therapy, you know, but she actually probably is talented enough to go and be a photographer. So why would I take that away from her? Because someone told me, and experience dictates that, you know, big dreams are sort of hard to attain. So you want your kids to be safe. But still, you have to hold on to your dream, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, holding on to your dreams doesn't mean that you are going to be a constant dreamer, right? A hopeless dreamer and not be practical at all. At the end of the day, you have to pay the bills, you have to put food on the table, you have to do all those things that normal human beings have to do. But if you can strike a balance and find that intersection between doing something that will enable you to do that and that also inspires you and you love to do, that's the best. If not, I mean, I what I love about what this colleague did was he knew that there was something that he wanted to do more than what he was doing throughout his career, but he was patient enough to build in the cushion and the resources to be able to go do that and then earn a small fraction of the money he earned before.
Which is amazing. And I think this is the whole definition of success. In fact, you are the cover story of our June issue, June 2014, Be Incandescent Magazine. We'll be starring Anna Dutra. And this is called the success issue, because I think that a lot of people as they age, and most of our readers who are small business owners, they really want to think about what success is, not just this incessant pursuit of some golden grasp, you know, something that they, that end of the rainbow with that big pot of money, because that doesn't necessarily make you happy. And that has to be part of the success quotient.
Yes. And what I would advise people to do is really start from a blank, from a white canvas, right? And try to put aside how others define success for them. And instead of having success equate status, achievements, money, have it equate happiness, and then find out what happiness means for them. It may turn out that happiness for some individuals actually means money, and then go for it and you're going to be happy. I'm not being judgmental about it at all, but try to equate success to personal happiness as opposed to whatever other definitions were given to you.
Perfect. Makes perfect sense, because money is definitely something that gives you the opportunity to find happiness, even if it may not be your ultimate goal. It's a great tool. I'm not poo-pooing money at all. So let's talk about some of your options. This issue also reflects one of our 8 steps to PR success, which is write a book. And you and I have talked about in some conversations that that's something that you're interested in. Tell us some of the other stuff that you're interested in and a little bit about that book idea you have. What would that look like?
So as I look at the next phase, and that there were some interesting sub-phases in there, as soon as I cut the umbilical cord to the traditional historical career path that I had taken, I did a couple of things that were pretty out of the beaten path, right? So at first I went to take yoga teacher training, and not necessarily because I wanted to teach yoga. I think that I'm actually not good enough for that, but I was thinking, well, maybe I go into this wellness business and all that. I also, on the fun side, bought an electric guitar to total horror of my children, and started to learn how to play electric guitar. I was not going into American Idol or The Voice or anything like that. I just wanted to spend some time learning that and learning music. These days, I'll tell you, Hope, the list of things I do not want to do is much, much more clear to me, right? So nothing that smells and feels or tastes like what I've done before goes into this list. Now, once I started to, as a friend of mine defined, and I found the expression so cool, he said, well, what you're doing now is going plural. So once I decided to go plural, one of the things that I've been doing more and more is serving as a director in boards of companies, private companies, public companies, non-for-profit foundation companies. And that is my way of satisfying my personal craving for problem solving in the business world. Combine that with giving back, right? Because I have all this hands-on experience in global businesses and mergers and acquisitions, and I can help companies and CEOs to be better, leveraging my own experience, and without having the day-to-day hands-on responsibility for delivering on a P&L. That's my personal definition of being corporate responsible. I earned so many great experiences from being in the corporate world, the global corporate world, for 28 years. I am giving back now in the form of being a responsible, value-added board director. I have also been doing a lot more teaching. As you know, I started my career as a professor of economics once I got my master's in economics, and I love to teach. So I've been doing a lot of teaching, a lot of mentoring, which I always did. And then finally, I'm a very competitive person, and since I no longer have that day-to-day P&L responsibility or have to increase market share, I am building my own way to create personal challenges. So one of the things that I did was I registered, which is crazy, but I did it. I registered for an Ironman, and I started a serious training program. I'm not doing that from scratch. I actually started to do triathlons about 4 years ago, and I've done over the past couple of years 2 half Ironman, but I'm going to try the full thing now. But I have to tell you, just to wrap up the answer to this question, is that I find this phase of not knowing exactly what's next extremely exciting and fascinating. And that's probably because, Hope, I always knew exactly what I wanted to do next, and I went for it. So not having that precision and predictability in terms of the future, not driving towards the clear next milestone, is actually very liberating and helps me to keep an open mind. And through that, I've met fascinating people. I've been dabbling into incredible opportunities that normally I probably wouldn't contemplate. And yes, there is some fear of the unknown at times, but I'm very comfortable with ambiguity. And so let's see what's next, right?
Excellent. Now, just tell us a little bit about this book idea you have. You want to share your wisdom, which would be great, because we want to hear what you know.
I want to share my wisdom in a different way, right? I have a collection of books on leadership and performance and all that, and they all address best practices and what perfect, amazing leaders look like, how they make decisions, what they do. And nobody told me that when you actually go into the marketplace, everything's different than that. It's almost like reading those books on pregnancy when you're expecting your child, about all those behavioral theories and those kids, that what you have to do for your child to sleep the entire night and perfectly well, to eat everything and to eat healthy and not throw tantrums. And then you deal with your own child, and, well, it's just not like that. And I wonder how many people, as they started to face the tough reality of leaders are not perfect and they are not perfect, and if they wondered what's wrong with me, because I know I did. It's like, well, I read all those books, and they don't. So I'm actually doing the flip side. I'm helping people to develop, but through observing and through identifying themselves, lessons and examples and instances of, hey, not so perfect leadership, not so perfect decision making, not so perfect, and I'll actually go a step further and say disastrous leadership, which is what we find much, much more out there than the best practices that are so well described in all the books that are out there.
Disastrous leadership. I think that sounds like a great title.
The Titanic leadership. how to sink a really big boat.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that definitely would be a bestseller. Thank you so much for your time, Anna. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to having many more conversations with you in the coming years. Best of luck with your Act Two.
So do I, Hope. Thank you for having me on your program, and it's always a pleasure working with you. And by the way, learning from your book on how to establish our personal brands and how to do PR that is authentic and effective has been a blessing, and I'm very grateful for that as well. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. So that's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We look forward to talking to you soon. That's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. If you're a truly amazing woman or know someone who is, don't hesitate to contact us. Simply log on to www.trulyamazingwomen.com and fill out the proposal form. We've profiled more than 250 women on the site who fit the bill of being truly amazing, and we look forward to honoring more. Who will be our next truly amazing woman? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.